This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Jack Albin is the Chief Investment Officer and Founding Partner at Crescent Capital. CrescentCapital.com is the website. Hey, Jack, welcome back. How are you?
Great. Happy New Year, John. Thanks.
Yeah. What's the new year going to be like? Is it going to be? Are we going to be happy this time next year?
I'm hoping we do a better job of collectively predicting what will happen in 2022 than we did in 2021, that's for sure.
Well, it's funny because in 2021, you had 2020. I mean, you know, we're three calendar years into this pandemic now. I wonder if we can learn from the last year, at least going forward, how the markets are going to respond, how the economy is going to respond, what the supply chain is going to be like. Well, what should we have learned that we can use now?
Sure. You're right. Nobody anticipated the supply chain shortages, stoppages and kinks in the chain. But we also didn't recognize the amount of growth that we would see in the economy on the reopening, if you will. That combined with household spending down, the savings that they had built up in 2020 led to inflation that nobody expected either. So, you know, there was a lot going on last year that I think we've certainly learned and we're putting into forecasts for this year. Good news is a lot of the supply chain issues are easing. We also expect that the Fed is on it now, as we're learning, and we expect inflation to trend back toward longer-term growth rates toward the end of 2022.
But you say the global economy and the U.S. economy rebounded even better than we would have imagined. I mean, as much as we follow the stock markets and know that they did well, maybe we should pause and just appreciate how good that is, huh?
That's it. I mean, you know, considering that a lot of the governments of the wealthy countries kind of locked arms and supported those out of work and those that, you know, needed the help, businesses and the like. I think 2020, the U.S. alone issued something like $5 trillion in checks and then another $2 trillion this year. And then add, of course, the developed world in Europe and in Japan. And, you know, we're well into the trillions. So certainly a lot of government support. And I think that, you know, really filtered through to a lot of spending.
The end justifies the means then? I mean, because you just said $5 trillion. Who and when does that bill get paid?
That's a good question. Hopefully very slowly over a long period of time. And, you know, I think that's really what, you know, the Fed is grappling with. They know they need to raise rates in order to address the inflation issue. But at the same time, you know, increasingly one of our biggest bills now is interest on the debt that we have. And that's crowding out a lot of the discretionary spending that the government would like to have. So I think there is a balance there. And certainly I believe the Fed's on it. And I think the market's gotten that message. And this year probably not going to be on the equity side, not going to be the same level of rallies that we've seen over the last 3 years. You know, remarkably, we've had three consecutive years of double-digit stock gains, and that's with bond yields rising last year. So it's just been a remarkable story.
You wrote about special purpose acquisition companies. What are those, and why did you care?
Sure. So special purpose acquisition companies are also called blank check companies, where an entrepreneur, if you will, an investor, a sponsor would issue an IPO and says, I'm raising a certain amount of money. I don't know. I'm going to buy something. I just don't know what it is, and neither do you. Then the shot clock starts. They've got 18 months to find an acquisition target or give the investors their original investment back. Plus, you know, notwithstanding all the expenses that they've had, they've got to pay that back too. So, so clearly, they're under a lot of pressure to do that. And we've had, you know, something like $150 billion of new special purpose acquisition companies issued to market last year. So, big number, it's a way for a lot of small and mid-sized private companies to get back into the public markets, which is really reversing a long trend of the stock markets getting smaller over time.
I'm unaware of the existence of those. Do I recognize the names of some of them?
You probably wouldn't. I would say probably the most notable one would be President Trump's media company was brought to market through a SPAC. And I can't recall the name, but that
does explain
that came
it.
Out in, somebody, I think, August or September.
Yeah, because I was imagining if I'm going to make that deal, I'm going to give you money, I'd sure as heck better believe in you, either in your investment skills or the media skills that Donald Trump has. I mean, you've got to believe in an individual rather than in a product per se, huh?
That's it. And it wasn't Donald Trump that, you know, issued the original SPAC. It was someone, it has to be an unrelated entity. So it really does have to be someone, a sponsor of these SPACs, someone that you really have to trust. I think Bill Ackman, you know, a lot of notable investors have issued SPACs and have raised money that way. But, yeah, I think you have to have some kind of credibility, seeming credibility in order to be able to do that.
Interesting writing from Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer and Founding Partner at Crescent Capital, crescentcapital.com. Nice to talk to you, Jack. Happy New Year.
Thanks, John. You too.
Have a good day. We'd like to talk to CNET about all things CNET-y. Joan Salzman joins us now, a senior reporter there. Hi, Joan. Welcome back.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Let's talk a little bit about the Consumer Electronics Show. I don't want to talk a lot about that, but what were the highlights of this sort of hybrid version of it this year?
Yeah, last year after it was completely virtual. There are some things in person this year. They've been scaled back because of Omicron sweeping the country. But there have been some, you know, high points coming out of it so far. For example, Samsung's first OLED television was unveiled. That's something that people have expecting out of Samsung, the biggest TV maker in the world, for a while. There's also a tease for Sony's PlayStation VR 2, along with a lot of other attention to augmented reality, virtual reality, and so-called metaverse-related things.
Augmented reality. So that's where you put on the headphone goggles and you see things and play games and travel and stuff like that?
Yeah, augmented reality basically means you can see the actual world around you, but there are some sort of digitally, virtually imposed creations that you see on top of stuff. So like if you had Luke Skywalker jumping off the table that you're sitting at. That's augmented reality versus virtual reality. You put on a headset and everything's blocked out and you're in a totally different world.
And which direction is it going? Full speed in both directions? Or because what I'm thinking of is the virtual reality. I hadn't thought about augmented reality.
Yeah, virtual reality is the, of the two formats, it's the one that's had the most sort of popular appeal. And it's had its own waves of hype and then disappointment. But definitely the Oculus Quest headset in the last year or so, especially during this period of lockdown and social distancing, it really grew in popularity, making virtual reality something that people are more familiar with. But people think possibly, especially seeing CES this year, augmented reality and AR glasses might have its moment this year. There's been some leaks that Apple may finally unveil its AR glasses in 2022. So we have to wait and see a bit, but it might be the time coming up soon that people become more familiar with AR as well.
And would the application of that be entertainment, or would it be some sort of aid in business or whatever?
So far, augmented reality, especially AR glasses, they've already become sort of most popular and most relevant in business and enterprise already. You could think of, you know, engineers use AR glasses while they're working on some sort of intricate device. Also in medical procedures, sometimes doctors, surgeons can use AR when they're in an operating room. But it hasn't definitely had that moment of consumer relevance quite yet. So we'll see. Maybe Apple's the one that brings it into the foreground for the average person on Main Street.
Why is TikTok in the news this week?
Oh, well, TikTok, of course, also exploded during the pandemic when people are stuck at home. But it's also maturing a little bit. It's moving into the wild, into places like gyms, restaurants, Taco Bell, hotels, through a partnership with a streaming TV platform that curates content to be in businesses.
So maybe in the gym I'm getting a Peloton-like feed of how to exercise or something like that?
Yeah, the difference between something like this and Peloton, this would be more like when you get on your elliptical at the gym and you can watch CNBC or you could watch Fox or you could watch, you know, some sort of, like, I don't know, my gym. In my gym, we're allowed to, like, go on walks along beaches on those little TV screens. This is sort of just add TikTok to that option list of what you could watch. Whereas Peloton, you know, that's, you know, a live class with an instructor. But it's potentially, you know, there's a lot of dances on TikTok. There's certainly a lot of fitness on TikTok. Maybe you could somehow integrate that into your gym routine with those screens that are around you.
Or a taped class on Peloton, but it's always their content. And I'm a little frustrated that I can't just watch a Friends rerun on my screen. I'm paying a fortune for the service, but you can only watch their content. Maybe there's a niche there. Instagram, why are they in the news?
Oh, well, Instagram just yesterday announced that they'll be reintroducing an option for the long-lost chronological feed on your Instagram feed. So a couple years ago, Instagram introduced only algorithmic options for what you see populating in your app when you open it up. Some people, and especially people that have criticized Instagram for how its algorithm can be detrimental to things like mental health, have advocated for the idea that you can have just a chronological feed in reverse chronological order of everything posted by the people you follow. It seems like in the next few months, they're going to be introducing that as one of three options for how you get to see everything in your Instagram feed.
Netflix's biggest binges over the holidays were The Witcher and Don't Look Up. What do you know about those shows?
All right. Well, The Witcher's second season, that's a fantasy series. And Don't Look Up was a dark comedy that's packed with stars. They both were the most popular two things on Netflix over the kind of crucial end of year period. And that's when Netflix has tons of people binging television. So things that it releases and become the most popular then tend to be some of its biggest hits of the year and even of all time. Don't Look Up, that comedy movie, has already made it into Netflix's third most watched movie ranking, even though it's only been out for about a week and a half at the time that they recorded all this data.
Really, that's the third most watched movie from Netflix?
Yeah, yeah. Part of the reason is because as Netflix grows bigger and bigger and bigger, there's simply more people to watch and accumulate total viewing hours of a movie. So the most watched thing, the most watched movie ever on Netflix was actually something that just came out a few months earlier. That was this movie called Red Notice. It had Dwayne Johnson and Gal Gadot and some other big stars in it.
It's funny.
So it didn't take very long for something to come up and get close to it again.
I guess so, but it's interesting. Netflix, always great content. Those two movies, not great. I mean, good, but not great. Don't Look Up. The return on the investment wasn't as good as the investment. That is, when you look at the stars that they had in Don't Look Up, that movie should have been the greatest movie of all time. And it was satire that was so heavy-handed, I think it started to swim against the stream. I'm done editing or giving you my review of that. Talk to me about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos for a half a minute.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Holmes, people, your listeners may remember, she was the founder and CEO of Theranos, which was one of Silicon Valley's biggest scandals, the fraudulent startup that purported it could revolutionize blood testing. Monday, a jury in federal court found that she was guilty of deliberately misleading investors in Theranos.
What's the word on her sentencing? 20 years, it could be per count, but that's not going to happen. Is she going to go to jail? And if so, what do you think? How long?
Yeah, well, there were these three counts of wire fraud and a count of conspiracy to commit wire fraud that she was actually found guilty of. Each of those carry 20-year sentences. But you're right. The general understanding is that they won't get stacked. It won't be like 80 years in prison, but they might be served simultaneously. But there is that possibility of 20 years in prison hanging over somebody for something like this.
Nice to talk to you. Let's visit again next week. Joan, thanks for your time today.
Thanks a lot.
Joan Salzman is an editor, a senior reporter, actually, at CNET.com. Tanya Kane joins us now, senior retail reporter for BusinessInsider.com. Thanks for joining us, Tanya. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. Hope you're doing well, too.
I am, but you're freaking my producer out because he doesn't want people going into his house handling his groceries.
It's a little bit of
a disturbing idea for a lot of people, I think, including myself, just because my dog is an escape artist, and that's what I'm paranoid about.
We're talking about Walmart, so just let's pick it up there. What's going on with Walmart?
So Walmart is expanding its basically program called Walmart In-Home, and that sees specially trained delivery drivers from the stores basically get a one-time passcode to your house's smart lock or, you know, a keypad or whatnot, and enter it to put down your groceries and potentially collect things like returns to Walmart.com. And so it's basically giving Walmart employees access to your house for deliveries. And it's coming to Chicago, and it's also going to come to my neck of the woods in Indianapolis.
How will that work? Will I sign up for it and throughout Chicagoland? Is it a pilot project, or are they for sure going to offer this service nationwide?
For now, it's still a pilot. It's not in every market, although this is a pretty big expansion. They're also going to Houston and Dallas, a few other places. And basically, if you order on Walmart's app, put in an online order, if it's available in your area, you will get the option to do Walmart In-Home. And, you know, there's kind of if you don't have a smart lock, they can sell you one for about $50. But other than that, it's sort of a program that $20 a month essentially comes out to. And you can also get a yearly fee. I think it's about close to $150 a year. But it's one of those kind of futuristic things that you don't really think about. But apparently they've had success in their test markets, and they're just looking to expand it further, see how it goes, essentially.
People are so concerned about their privacy these days. Will this work? Are people going to invite strangers into their home, even though they're providing a service?
Right. And it's a good question, because I think it really depends on the shopper, right? And this is something I talked with a senior vice president at Walmart, Tom Ward, about. You know, he's kind of spearheading this program. And his thinking is that, you know, people who are maybe very busy running around and they're going to be stuck on their computer all day and they don't mind someone coming over to do this, it's like an added convenience, because it's not like you have to wait around and be checking, you know, your doorstep to make sure porch pirates haven't made off with your groceries, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to be going in directly. And then, I mean, and you know, there are going to be safety measures in terms of, like, the employee will be wearing a body cam, essentially, that records the entire transaction, and will be sort of instructed to basically, like, be masked up the entire time and sanitize surfaces, keep things clean. But, I mean, for me, my house is so messy. I would just be embarrassed someone coming in there and tripping over all my stuff. Like,
yeah.
It's not for me, but I can understand maybe the appeal for some shoppers.
Right. Doesn't have to be for everybody for it to be. And Amazon has lockers now that they'll distribute things closer and closer to home. You can see stores extending their tentacles, getting closer and closer to your bedroom. This is just the next extension of that, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's sort of competing with Amazon in the sense of, like, who can be more convenient, right?
Yeah,
and what's more convenient than not having to do anything, essentially, which is what In-Home's all about. And you know, obviously porch pirates have become increasingly a problem for a lot of people as more people rely on e-commerce orders coming in. So this sort of negates that issue for some people.
Amazon's going to come out with a service where they do this and then they scramble the eggs for you. You know,
house chef. I love it.
They'll actually cut the meat for you. That's not the only retail story, though, I wanted to talk to you about. The supply chain crisis, the delayed online orders, prices went up. Have we seen the limit of that, do you think?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And it's such a multifaceted issue, right? One thing, I know the New York Times came out with a very interesting report over the holidays that sort of was kind of interesting, because it went into a lot of holiday orders weren't necessarily delayed this year. And that was through the carriers, essentially, FedEx, UPS, USPS. You know, they had enough people, they hired people to be able to handle this. So it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be. And also, you have on the flip side, people were just ordering their gifts earlier. Now that we're post-holidays, sort of, it's kind of maybe becoming a little bit clearer about what's going to take shape afterwards. And certain things, like the lack of container ships on the Pacific Ocean and tangles with that supply chain, like that's not an easy fix because you basically have to introduce more ships and, you know, like, you know, restructure things. And that's going to take potentially a while. And then other things like labor shortage, right? That's causing some supply chain issues too, with like a lack of truck drivers and whatnot, people in logistics. And that's not going to necessarily fix itself instantly. But the good news is now that there's no holidays, you know, that now that that's over for a lot of people, we're not really on the hook for like getting presents in on time. So hopefully everyone can have a sigh of relief regarding that, unless, you know, they have relatives' birthdays that are in January, I guess.
With Omicron coming out, the brick and mortar mainstays in America, Target, Walmart, Costco, Home Depot, are they positioned to withstand this surge, at least in their stores? I wonder what the, I wonder how they're trying to manage this situation right now.
Yeah, no, I think they generally are. I mean, speaking generally, we don't, there's so much uncertainty right now, unfortunately, with Omicron. But, you know, so we don't, we're not, you know, it's not entirely is certain whether or not people are going to start hoarding or stocking up on certain items again. At this point, I don't think from speaking with retail sources that people I've talked to have seen that quite yet. But of course, it could happen as uncertainty grows. But I think they're pretty well situated at this point. And again, as inflation kind of continues to be a problem, some of the retailers that are very much known for being value centric and, like, you know, keeping costs down will actually potentially see a bit of a benefit from that, because people will be flocking there to buy their stuff because it's going to be a cost differential.
Anya Kane's a senior retail reporter, businessinsider.com. Nice to talk to you, Anya. Let's visit again. Appreciate your help.
Thanks so much.
It's 12:43. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and this is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Walgreens will invest $120 million in labor this year as the tight labor market takes its toll on the company. Walgreens is trying to counter staffing shortages that are causing a reduction in operating hours at some of its stores. The company hasn't said how the money will be spent. The Deerfield-based company has already offered $1,250 sign-on bonuses for pharmacy technicians and one-time bonuses for current pharmacists. Vaccines and testing boosted Walgreens store sales growth to its highest level in more than two decades as the drugstore chain beat fiscal first quarter expectations. Marge Wrigley will sit on the sidelines for this year's Super Bowl. The Chicago Candy Company says it has no plans to advertise brands like M&M's, Skittles, or Snickers during next month's game. Those brands have appeared in numerous Super Bowl commercials, and since 2010, one or more of the three brands has had a Super Bowl ad. Mars Wrigley, an NFL sponsor, says it will focus instead on promotions and other marketing. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. Cue the announcer, please.
You are now free to move about the country.
And as Southwest Airlines moves you about the country, it's going to be increasingly powered by soybeans. Southwest announced that by the end of next year, it's going to be filling its planes with 5 million gallons of sustainable aviation fuel. And by 2030, it plans to replace 10% of its total fuel consumption with sustainable fuel made from soybeans, in large part. Mac Marshall is with the United Soybean Board, and he says it isn't only Southwest. Other airlines are lining up, too.
Some estimates have, you know, by the end of the decade, that, you know, total draw from sustainable aviation fuel to be, you know, upwards of 10 million metric tons of oil. And, you know, three quarters of that production would potentially be located within the U.S. and naturally drawing from, you know, domestically produced soybean oil.
So one may wonder whether farmers can grow enough beans to satisfy the new demand for aviation fuel while continuing to supply the food chain that depends on soybeans and their byproducts. Mac Marshall says he has no doubt farmers can grow the beans, and right now more capacity is being built to crush the beans and process the oil.
The industry is kind of, you know, to paraphrase Field of Dreams, has you know, kind of an adopted a if you build it, they will come approach.
Man, they're coming as the airline industry tries to wean itself from petroleum and clean up its act. How about that soybean? Its versatility is well known, from food to all sorts of uses in industry, including the foam in car seats, all coming out of the ground on a farm near you.
So it's a miraculous bean indeed.
Mm-hmm. At the Chicago Board of Trade, beans are 7.5 cents lower now, $13.87 a bushel. Corn is up about a penny at $6.03, and wheat is trading about 16 cents lower now at $7.44. Oh, how about this for serendipity? From the farm to your belly, today is National Bean Day. It's also National Shortbread Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Amy.
Hey, John. How's it going today?
It's going well. Sony's up to... they're going to make a car?
Yeah, well, that's what the CEO says anyway. So I've been keeping an eye on the Consumer Electronics Show happening in Vegas because that kind of is what we're going to be, you know, unveiling all the things of what we're going to be talking about in the months and years to come. But the Sony CEO said that they may soon start building electric vehicles. He kind of pointed to this SUV concept. He feels like they were really well positioned to do that. You know, he said they're well positioned as a creative entertainment company to redefine mobility. Lots of competition going on in the electric vehicle space right now. Tesla's still leading that way. Rivian right here made in downstate Normal. A lot of eyes on Rivian to see what they're going to do. They've had a contract with Amazon to deliver all these delivery vehicles, and Amazon just pulled in another company to that. So there's still some, now there's some kind of question marks. So as we move more towards an infrastructure that would support electric vehicles, I expect we'll see new players in that space. I did not expect it would be Sony, though. That's kind of an interesting move for them.
Funny, I mean, I've never heard of Rivian before. Now there's that. And just because it's a different kind of powertrain, you know, instead of a gas engine, electric,
right?
These new players are in the space. But at the end of the day, I don't know what else it is but a car. It's a vehicle to get you from here to there. So why does Sony feel like they've got some sort of new twist on that? I wonder what they're thinking here. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, there's one industry watcher that you know, has been commenting on a lot of this, and he made a comment that I thought was interesting of, like, it ultimately doesn't matter who solves it as long as someone does, as long as somebody, you know, gets into that space and brings the masses with them. And he was kind of talking about this idea of a legacy automaker, that it may not be a legacy automaker that makes that shift. It might be somebody who's familiar in the electronic development space who gets into that space first ahead of legacy automakers, which I thought was kind of an interesting point. But, you know, time will tell. We'll have to wait and see who wins that race, really. Right now, Tesla is certainly in the lead.
Why is Coca-Cola in the news?
Coca-Cola is in the news because they are launching a boozy version of Fresca. That's kind of a mouthful to say. It's not the first alcoholic drink that they've made. They made in 2020, they made the Topo Chico hard seltzer, but now they're creating a boozy Fresca that's coming out later this year. They said it's a blend of different Fresca recipes they've heard from fans from around the world. So we will see what that looks like. But I think, you know, interestingly, they reported that Fresca's kind of saw a resurgence over the last year. I'm not exactly sure why that is, but that's kind of an interesting thing. I haven't thought about Fresca in years, but nonetheless, as we're moving into spiked seltzer and, you know, hemp-based, sodas that are non-alcoholic and different kinds of alcohol, it was craft beer for such a long time. And as we're moving into new spaces, that's kind of an interesting innovation from the Coca-Cola company.
A friend of mine made a Fresca-based cocktail. It was a Fresca. It was her version of a margarita. It was the booze and Fresca.
Oh.
And it worked. It was pretty dang tasty. If that's the direction you want to go with your alcohol, I guess they should not give up that part of the ingredients. Go ahead and put the booze in there themselves. I wonder what the alcohol is. Is it vodka? Is it tequila? Is it rum? What do they put in there? Do you know?
They haven't said a lot about it, so it's kind of a wait and see. But I will be very curious. And I wonder, too, if they'll maybe start with one and go into some others because it could be such a mixer for a lot of things. Like, it could be a margarita, as you said. It could be a Paloma. It could be a lot of different things. We'll see.
What's Taco Bell doing?
Taco Bell, well, so the other day you and I were talking about Sweetgreen launching a salad subscription program. Taco Bell is in that space now. They have launched a taco a day subscription program nationwide. It starts today. So for $10 a month, you get a taco every day for 30 days straight via the app. So you have to use the Taco Bell app. And the idea really is that, you know, yes, you'd get a taco every day for $10 a month, but you probably wouldn't just stop at one taco. You'd probably get your free taco, but then you'd order other stuff to fill out your meal. They piloted this in Tucson. And they said they saw a really big uptick, and a lot of the people, about 20% of them, renewed the pass for a second time. So they felt like that was successful. So we if you are really feeling the Taco Bell, you can get in on that Taco a Day subscription. There's a limited amount or limited types of tacos, but they're not that limited. It's soft taco, spicy potato, crunchy taco, Dorito Loco, and the Supreme version. That covers a lot of ground at Taco Bell.
Can I get 30 tacos in one day and then pass the next 29? I mean, I see how that would get you back more often, but what if I don't want to go 30 days in a row? I want to go 15 days and I'll get two. I wonder if they do the math like that.
I doubt it. I don't think so. I think it's just the one taco each day for 30 days. But I like your idea. Let's bargain with Taco Bell. It seems like that's the way to go.
Wonder if other fast food chains, I mean, okay, so this week we have two versions of that. I don't remember McDonald's or Burger King or KFC, some of the other big players doing anything like that in the past. Do you?
Burger King tried a coffee subscription service in 2019, but they discontinued it just a few months later. Panera Bread had a coffee and tea program. I think it was about $9 a month and you could earn free baked goods from that. But less than a year, they said they had about nearly 500,000 paying subscribers of that. But, you know, so it's been little stuff like coffee and tea and things like that. But now we're starting to see, you know, salads and tacos and bigger components of meals.
This texter, Amy, says, you're right, John. We call it a skinny margarita. You add some fresh squeezed lime juice. We also enjoy Fresca and vodka. It's so refreshing. It's light on calories. I remember Fresca as a kid growing up drinking it and thinking that was a popular soda.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went away. And now I think it's found a place as a mixer. So interesting to see how that's changing a little bit.
Yeah. Indeed.
Good enough. Thanks, Amy Guth.
Thanks so much, John.